So in this series, Jesus, the Greatest Show on Earth, we've been looking at these interactions that Jesus has throughout the Bible with crowds, a lot of times with crowds. And everywhere he went, he drew a crowd because he taught like no one else taught, and he did incredible things like heal people and just did amazing things. And so whenever Jesus came to a town, everybody wanted to check him out. Everybody wanted to see him. But what we're saying today is Jesus isn't just a historical figure who was doing these things years and years and years ago, but there are actually sightings, and there are people right here, right now, who see him. People right here and right now who experience him. So today is going to be fun and a bit different. You're going to be hearing from 9 folks, all part of our Crossroads community, but from very different walks of life. We're going to be hearing from students, from business leaders, from moms, from dads, from artists, from counselors, people who have different walks of life but have this common denominator of saying, I've seen the greatest show on earth. I've seen Jesus. He's had an impact in my life. And so it's going to kind of be 3-minute rapid fire, one after the other. And I just want to give us some context for the power of the kind of experience we're going to have over the next 40 minutes together. This is from Revelation 12:11. And this is the end of the story of the Bible, and it's saying how we ultimately triumph as people who are in relationship with Jesus. We triumph over him, over the enemy, by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And what this is saying is that in some crazy and incredible way, the story of God advances because Jesus, the Lamb, sacrificed himself, but it also advances when people tell the stories of how Jesus has impacted their lives. And so today, as you hear from folks, maybe you'll connect with 3 of these stories, maybe you'll connect with only one, but I think there's something here for all of us as we just hear from folks, a part of our community saying, hey, I've seen Jesus. I've seen the greatest show on earth. So you guys ready for this? It's gonna be a fun afternoon together. And we're gonna go ahead and get started now. I wanna invite up a friend of mine, Jonathan Willis. Let's welcome him up.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, my name is Jonathan Willis. I'm excited to be here to share with you about why I think Jesus is the greatest show on earth. A little backstory, I'm a photographer. I get to make pictures of people for a living, and it's been awesome to see how God uses and has used some of my work to inspire people to fight injustice, to invest in the kingdom of God, and to get involved in some of the really cool stuff that's happening here at Crossroads. But those images actually that's not what I'm excited to talk about today. I shot a series of portraits earlier this year that God used to teach me what it looks like when he invades a relationship and a conversation. And to put a little context to that, a few months ago I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who was just in a pretty dark place. He was struggling, and his marriage was feeling really difficult. And I reached out to him, and we sat down and got real with one another and got honest and got vulnerable. And we invited Jesus into that moment, and he showed up, and he showed up in a really powerful way, and I think transformed both of us kind of in that moment and sort of since then. So after that conversation, that interaction, I headed back to the studio and cracked open the computer, and I looked at these portraits here that, God, Jesus works in mysterious ways, doesn't he? What he wanted to teach me was that when he shows up, he fills us with the words and the message that he wants us to deliver in that moment. He also fills us with the insight and the strength and the grace, maybe to extend mercy and to just extend an ear to, oh my gosh, that's actually my sister right there. And she's blocked my cell phone since then. But you know, he gives us what we need for that moment. And in that moment, I would say that we're transformed. I mean, these people in these shots, they don't look like this all the time, and it's a good thing. And that's kind of how I felt in that moment. I felt like I was operating a little bit out of, you know, what I typically sort of operate with this friend, and it felt a little awkward, just like it felt awkward being blasted with air for 15 or 20 seconds. But as a result, like, I was able to, with the camera, create something that was at least interesting, potentially beautiful, certainly different, and you know, transform these people, and it was great. And like my relationship with this guy, you know, that has changed. We have gotten significantly closer together and gone much deeper as friends. And it's been really cool to see how his marriage is on the track towards reconciliation. And the both of us had been encouraged in the process. And that's total evidence in my mind of what it looks like when Jesus shows up and why he is the greatest show on earth. So thank you.
Hello, I'm Lena Tome. I'm going to try not to make any inappropriate jokes, spit when I talk, or make up words, as my father, Brian Tome, might do, the senior pastor here. But I do want to try something really fast. So if you recognize this clapping pattern and what I'm about to do, I'd like you to join in. UC. Thank you. I do go to UC, proudly Cincinnati, go Bearcats. And I've seen Jesus be the greatest show on earth in college when he has showed up and become real and really just been revealed to me through my friends and through my mess and messy people and everything else. So, when I went to college, my dad told me that he didn't want me coming to Crossroads for my first year. The reason for this being that he wanted to make sure that my faith was built on Jesus and not built on Crossroads and not built on my family, as I've grown up around here. So I go to college, and things quickly become busy with my course load and my involvement and everything else. And it quickly becomes all about me. And there was one night where I was really struggling. I felt very overwhelmed and was really emotional, and I was looking for something to make me feel better. And so I'm looking around my room, and I find a letter that my high school government teacher, Mrs. Peterson, had written me when I graduated. And in it, she said, "When you go to college, the biggest temptation you're going to face is to become self-absorbed." Check. She goes on to explain that, and she goes on to say that Francis of Assisi once said, "Preach the gospel, and when necessary, use words." So we talked about what the gospel is a few weeks ago, and it being the good news of Jesus. So show people who Jesus is, and quickly after reading this letter, I started to recognize ways that the gospel was being preached to me without words. So I send her an email to say how much this has meant to me, how much this letter meant to me, because it felt like it was written, you know, 9 months prior or whatever it was, but was exactly what I needed to hear at that moment. So I send her an email to tell her how much I appreciated it. And I wake up and I check my email and I have an email from her. And in it she said, "Lena, I was putting away something in my desk, and the recommendation letter, thank you letter, that you had written me fell out of my desk, and I picked it up and started reading it, and from when I was in high school, and she said, I was thinking about you and praying for you and decided to check my email before I went to lunch, and when I checked it, this email was in there from you." Okay, so that was the gospel being preached to me without actually talking about Jesus. He was in that. I have a friend who, my roommate, Megan, wanted to go to Crossroads, and so I broke the rule in the spring of my freshman year, and I came back, and I was sitting in a spot I don't usually sit in here, and I used to sit in church, whether it was here or, you know, somewhere in Clifton or wherever, and I'd often think, oh, I really wish this person was here to hear this today, or I would think, oh, yeah, I've heard this story, and I was sitting, when I came back, I was sitting there, and I felt like there had to be a spotlight on me because it was exactly what I needed to hear at that exact moment, and it was like something had just clicked, and every time I came back, it was like my heart was open to what Jesus was looking to say to me. So Megan continued to drive 4 people to church the rest of that year and the year following, and continues to drive people to church every Sunday, and her family is now a part of Crossroads Mason. That's Jesus. I have a couple friends who got in a really bad car accident, and one of whom became paralyzed, and he still goes around and talks to students of all different ages about what it means to still have a faith and how he still sees Jesus as being real. That's Jesus. When 30 of my sorority sisters wake up at 6:30 a.m. on a Saturday to come do Go Cincinnati, and it's the first time that some of them have ever been in a church, that's Jesus. College has been really hard over the past couple years, but it's also been the most alive that I've ever felt because of these everyday instances where Jesus might not be doing huge miracles in my life, but I get to see him move in all that's around me, and I'm excited about it because I've seen it.
My name is Hannah Lasky. I'm 16 years old, and I go to Highlands High School. Go Birds. And I would just like to say that in like the 37 services that I've been here, I've become addicted to vanilla nut coffee, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I would also like to say, if you feel stupid because you can't open the creamers and it doesn't pour out right, you're not alone, because I can't open them either, okay? I just wanted to share that with you. But that actually has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. Anyways, something that I've learned in the past year between the most recent last Wednesday service and my time at camp is that Jesus is on this constant pursuit of you. And where that message was really driven home for me was at a place called Kingston, Maine. And Kingston, Maine is where the Crossroads WizKids tutoring program sends their students, and they get to go to camp for usually like the first time in their life, and they get to hear about Jesus for the first time ever. And then CSM, Crossroads Student Movement, which I'm involved in, Chocolate Chicas represent. And you're making me lose my train of thought. And Crossroads Student Movement sends students, and they're their junior counselors. And basically for a week, it's just this big, we get to love on them and show them how Christ loves them, and it's awesome. And every single year, not by coincidence, God has placed a girl named Secret in my cabin. And Secret's the one on the far left, wearing, borrowing my glasses. Yes, it was 2007. Yes, they're awesome glasses. No, you can't borrow them. And for 5 years in a row, Secret was put in my cabin. And she never cracked. And you wait for that moment where like the earth shatters and there's lightning and they fall on their knees and they start crying and they accept Jesus. Well, that moment didn't happen. She's the most walled up person that I've ever met. And she doesn't accept anything. She doesn't let anything in, and she doesn't let anything out. And so this year, fifth summer in a row, when I saw she's on my cabin list, I kind of just grew apathetic. And I said, you know what? She's not accepting it. It's not going through for her, so just gonna love on her and give her a fun week of camp. And, you know, whatever, it's just not gonna happen. Ha, good one, Hannah. Thursday night at camp, our director, Leanne, actually presents the gospel and tells these kids, a lot of times for the first time, that there's a man who loves you passionately, and he died for you, and you actually be in a relationship with him. And in the form of a little repeat after me prayer, these kids have the opportunity to accept Christ. And that night in small groups, Secret, who, like, this is the most words she's spoken all week, she raised her hand and she told the rest of the cabin that she had accepted Christ that night. And you can clap for that. Oh, yeah. And it was beautiful. It was awesome. We're all crying, obviously. And, but me being the Debbie Downer that I am, I said, Secret, you know, like, you've been here before and you've actually, like, you've said that prayer before. What's going to be different about this time when you go home? How are you actually going to be a light for Jesus? And she sits there and thinks for a second, and she says, I get it now. And she said, the love that you've shown me and that all the other counselors have poured out on me, that's how Jesus loves me, and I get it. And I think the story of Secret is a perfect reminder of how you are never too far out of the reach of God's grace. And Jesus is never, ever going to stop pursuing you. And there's actually a verse in the Bible in Romans. This is the Message version. It says this: I am absolutely convinced that nothing living or dead, angelic or demonic, today or tomorrow, high or low, thinkable or unthinkable, absolutely nothing can get between us and God's love because of the way that Jesus, our master, has embraced us. And I've seen it in secret, how Jesus broke through her fortress of a heart. And I've seen it in my life too, how he can use me in all my brokenness, in all my imperfections. I'm not perfect, in case you didn't already know. You can ask my friends, you can ask my family, I'm not perfect. And he's using me this weekend to stand up on stage in front of thousands of people. And it's just a perfect example of how he's never gonna stop pursuing secret, and he's never gonna stop pursuing me. And I know, I'm absolutely positive that he's never gonna stop pursuing you. And I know because I've seen it.
Good afternoon. My name is Kirk Perry. And I don't know if you're anything like I am, but when I see a beautiful picture, it's very easy for me to see the image of Jesus in that picture. But when I see pictures of suffering or desperation or destruction, I struggle seeing a picture of Jesus. And my story today is going to be about my last 12-year journey to see Jesus in triumph and in suffering and everything in between. And I'm going to tell that story through my 18-year-old daughter, Carly, who's given me permission to share her story with you today. And this is a picture of Carly. She's a recent 18-year-old high school graduate getting ready to go on to the next chapter of her life with the world seemingly in the palm of her hands. And that picture looks like triumph, a beautiful girl getting ready to venture out into the world. But like Paul Harvey, the rest of the story, there's some suffering that goes along with the triumph that we'll share. In 1 Peter, chapter 4, verse 12 and 13, is one of the phrases, or one of the scriptural references that I go back to when I'm struggling and when I am suffering. And it says to us, "Do not be surprised at the potential trial you are suffering, as though something strange was happening to you. But rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed." To me, quite simply, what that means is sometimes to get the most magnificent view from the top of a mountain, you've got to walk through deep valleys to get there. Hence the suffering and the triumph, part of the same journey. And so I'm going to start with my journey and Carly's journey back in June of 1999. And this is a picture of Carly and her younger sister, full of life and clearly triumphant in this with their cheesy little kid smiles, because they're getting ready to go back to the United States. At the time, we lived in South Korea, and they were going to get to come home for the summer with their mom to be with the family for that entire summer. But little did we know, inside of Carly was growing a 1-pound tumor the size of a Nerf football that was consuming her kidney, part of her colon, and spreading into her lungs. So 1 month and a week from this picture, the next picture you'll see is Carly and I in the recovery room at Children's Hospital here in Cincinnati, where she had that kidney removed, part of her colon, and a prognosis that wasn't entirely positive. And I struggled seeing Jesus in that picture. And I struggled in the next picture of Carly's first chemo treatment, her face bloated from the drugs, knowing that what was coursing through her veins was toxic to her body, but necessary for her survival. I struggled to see Jesus in that picture. I struggled to see Jesus in the picture of her getting her weekly chemo for 6 months, knowing again what was coursing through her veins. I struggled. And I struggled seeing her pass out at the end of every one of these treatments because her body was so overwhelmed, and I had to carry her limp body out to our car. I struggled to see Jesus until one day in that hospital, when I was dealing with my anger at Jesus over what was happening to my daughter, I met a man who I struck up a friendship with who had a daughter as well suffering from brain cancer, and she ultimately succumbed to the disease. But when I was chatting with him in the hall, I noticed him with a copy of the Bible in his hand. And I said to him, "I don't know how you can believe that when that is going on right now in your life." And he looked me right in the eye, and he said, "Without this, I have no hope. In this, I see Jesus. And I see Jesus through her, whether it's for one more day or one more year. I know because she's lived, her life is going to be a light unto others. And I know that it'll make a difference not only in our lives, but in the lives of other people around us. I know this book and this man gives me hope. He gave me hope that day and caused me to think back to 1 Peter chapter 4 and what it said about suffering and made me think about my journey in a different way. So over the course of the next 5 years with regular checkups, we found out that Carly had been in remission and then officially cured after 5 years. Praise God. But we thank you. But as we got into our teenage years, because of the struggle she had with believing that Jesus could love her going through what she did and seeing other kids dying, she went into a severe depressional state, spent a couple weeks in the hospital dealing with that, which then led to anorexia, which she literally was starving herself to death. And I struggled seeing Jesus there. In this next picture, when I showed her what I was going to share, it's like, oh, you're showing my thin picture. I like that. And it's a picture of her with her brothers and sister. But what that picture doesn't tell you is that she lost 33% of her body weight in the 6 months preceding this. And I struggled to see Jesus in that picture. But here's where I know he was there. And I know it's true in my own life as I've been on this journey, is that every day I do something dumb to pull myself away from Jesus. But he comes running to me and drawing me near to him, because in my depths, he wants me to climb to the top of the mountain with him. And I know he was with Carly, because in the next picture, at the depths of her depression and at the depths of her anorexia, Christ was in her to prompt her to go to Mama Lodi. And I see triumph in this picture. I see the joy in kids' faces, and I see the joy in her eyes being a part of that, which drew her nearer to Christ. So while I struggled, I now see the success. I see the triumph in that picture. And I'm going to close with the picture I started with, which is of this beautiful 18-year-old high school graduate who in 12 days is going to be going to the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, and she is going to be studying special needs education. And I know that Jesus has been taking her through this journey to prepare her for her life's work, so that when she interacts with these kids, she is going to be giving the light of Christ into them through all of her sufferings and her journey, and turning that into a way for them to see Jesus through her.
About now. Oh, yes. Six times this. How many have we done this? It's terrible. I'm Josh, in case we haven't met. You know, I have seen Jesus the most recently in my relationship with my oldest son, Noah. It might seem a little strange. You know, Jesus was never a father himself, but according to Scripture, he was the greatest son that ever lived. And though he didn't have kids, he definitely fathered. I just want you to take a look at this interaction that he was having with his father regarding the people that he cared about. He says, during my time here, I protected them by the power of the name you gave me. I guarded them so that not one was lost. That's what a father does. He knew what it means to be the father. I just want to tell you in full disclosure, I never wanted to be a father. I wanted to be a rock star and travel the world. I had no idea what being a dad meant, and it would seem that God has a bit of a sense of humor. This is my family. I have five kids. it's my wife, Jennifer, my oldest son, Noah, on the left, Josiah, Providence, Eve, and Joshua. And I'll just tell you right now, I would have 10 more of these wonderful individuals if I could. I'd have to give birth to them, but I would. You know, I've discovered that being a committed husband and father is really the greatest thing in the world. Now, I love all of my kids, but I have to deal with each one of them differently. And my focus lately has really been on Noah, who's now 14. And really, one, because he's just in a really unique position as a 14-year-old. And two, because I really feel like the father-son relationship is sort of dying out in our culture. And three, because I have been fathered by Jesus. I have felt what it means to be fathered. And one of the things really important to me for all of my boys is that I define for them what it means to be a man. You know, Charlie Sheen and Justin Bieber, they don't get to do that. That's my job. I lead my boys. And so I'd started something with Noah when he was 12, and I'm going to do it for all my boys, and my wife will do it for our daughters. But I called it the You're a Man Day. And it takes place on his 12th birthday. It will be the same for my other sons. And what that looks like is I bring together all the guys who I'm in close relationship with. And for Noah, we did it in our living room, my house. We gathered around him, and I started out just by telling him what a man is and what a man does, so he would never be confused by that. Then I sort of marked the moment before him and before all my friends by saying, today you're a man. From this day going forward, you're a man. You will always know that you're accepted and loved and approved of by your father. You will never have to guess. Then I had the guys with me just encourage him, either with words and with notes, and just telling him what they saw in him. And then they had gifts for him, sort of symbolizing the things that he would need going into manhood. Like someone gave him a shotgun. Sort of symbolizing the good and bad of power. And someone gave him a compass so he would always find his way back. And then we all prayed for him, and it was great. And then we went to a friend's house for dinner. And during dinner, I stole Noah away, and we went inside, and I had all the women come in and just tell him what they needed from a man. Because God knows I have no idea what a woman needs. And they encouraged him, and they prayed for him. And I'll tell you, I don't know if I'm raising my kids right. I don't know if I'm doing a good job. I know that I have great kids. I have a son who I am deeply proud of, all of my kids. And I know that anything about me, if it is good, any good fathering in me, only comes from the fact that I've allowed Jesus to father me. I've experienced that. And because I've experienced what it means to be cared for, I could tell you that I'll take being a committed father, a committed husband, over being a rock star any day.
Hello? Okay. My name is David Russell, and for the last 5 years, I was on staff at Crossroads and was able to see Jesus in action virtually every single day. A few months ago, I left staff and went back out into the marketplace, and I'm happy to report that I still get to see Jesus every day. That's a good thing. And one of the ways I get to see him is I get to see and hear him talking. He has a lot to say, and sometimes he even chooses to use me to say what he wants to say. And one thing that I know for sure that he wants to say is he wants people to know how much he absolutely loves them. And that the power of his love has the ability to overcome any circumstance that someone might be going through that they might have set aside as dead and buried. And he wants to bring that back to life. And what I'm seeing in my day-to-day right now is I'm seeing that what happens when someone who hasn't been exposed to that love of Jesus before, or maybe in a while, when there's a depletion in that reservoir, when they get a taste of that, that it transforms them, and it changes them from the inside out, and they want more of that, they crave it, and they maybe make different decisions as a result of that. A couple of examples that I want to share that are just off the, that are shareable. One is, was having a conversation with this young lady, had just met her. It was actually an interview that I was going through with her. And she was telling me about her experiences, what she was good at, her past job history, things like that. And in the course of her talking, it became very clear to me that she was struggling with this burden that she had carried of a hurt, a wrong that had happened to her in one of her previous experiences. And again, she's laying that out for me, and I'm like, I just met you. I'm not sure what to say about this. And felt that Jesus saying, you need to pour out a little bit of me in the situation. And so in the course of our conversation, I just kind of said, hey, this might sound a little bit weird, But I just want you to know that that experience that you're talking about, it never should have happened to you. It was wrong. I can definitely see the hurt that you're experiencing, and I just want you to know that on behalf of that person who did that to you, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that ever happened to you. And to see what happened to her physically, it was like the wall that she built around her heart had just changed. It had just fallen away. And how she approached me was different. I was able to see just how Jesus just really broke through in that situation, and it changed me as well. Sitting next to a gentleman who, for come to find out for years, he had just really been struggling with a lot of rejection, not feeling like he was approved of, and just felt kind of disregarded in what he was doing. And this was very, very obvious. Again, I don't know you. Not sure what to say about this, but again, Jesus said a little dab will do you, so drop some of me in the situation right here. And what I was able to tell him was that, you know what, you have insurpassable worth, and your history does not define who you are, and what I know to be true is that there is a future for you that is brighter than anything that you could ever imagine if you would only go after that. And to see him let go of the stranglehold that he had on bitterness, let that fall away, and to step out into a new place, be bold, and follow his dream, I know that I was changed in seeing him do that, and I really feel like he was changed as a result of that as well. And I've also seen that kind of play out in my own life as well. I've been married for 14 years, and one of the biggest arguments that my wife and I have, she loves English, and she would kill me for that, but we'll argue about that later on. But the biggest thing, we tend to have passionate discussions. We don't call them arguments in our house. It's passionate discussions about how I think that I'm right and I'm perfect, and she doesn't agree with me. And so it's weird. And it could be around, you know, my pride or my controlling tendencies, or even in some cases where I love Jesus and I believe him, but maybe I don't believe that he wants to be who he says he is in my life in this particular situation. And in those times where we're going back and forth and I'm trying to win, I hear him whisper in my ear and say, you know what, David? You could never be more right than I was. And so in that moment, I have no other choice but to find a humble place, put on this cloak of humility, and to figure out a way that I can die to myself and love my wife even more. And all these things being said, I see Jesus. He has things to say, and he might just want to speak through you if you would only let it. I've seen it.
Hi there. I finally learned after 5 services to take those stairs slowly. I'm Allie, and I too have been seeing Jesus in kind of a strange place, definitely unconventional, and that's because it's been happening while I've been asleep. No kidding. I've always been a dreamer ever since I was a kid. I've always had lots of vivid, vivid dreams, some I could even repeat to you from 10, 15, 20 years ago. But I don't mean this time dreams exactly. I mean a voice that I've been hearing while I've been asleep. And I want to give you a quick example of one night when this happened. I have been up a few extra times in the middle of the night lately, usually stumbling my way into the bathroom. And on one of these nights, I realized that I had been hearing a voice, and the voice had been repeating the same phrase to me over and over and over again. And it had a gravity to it, just a weight, and it sat very heavily on my heart, not in a dark way, but just in an important way. And I said the phrase out loud, and it was, "Ready yourself, ready yourself." And it was the same tone and the same voice, like I'd been hearing it on a tape recording all night long. So I thought, well, this is important. And I instinctively knew this could be the voice of Jesus. And I wanted to remember it, so I said it out loud a few times, didn't know what it meant, and I went back to sleep. So I wake up the next morning, and I realized that from that point forward in the night, I was hearing a second phrase. Same voice, same tone, same weight. And this time the phrase was even stranger. It was, you'll serve before kings. You'll serve before kings. I mean, it seemed to me that I had been hearing it for hours on end. And so I'm running this all by my husband over breakfast, and I'm going, isn't this strange? What do I do with this? And so I decided to do what any rational person would do. I Googled it. What else do you do? And I didn't know what any of this meant, and so I just said, I'm not going to let this go. I want to know. God, I want to know if this is you. Jesus, if this is your voice, I want to know. And the only thing I could think to do was Google it. And so this is what I found. An exact quote from a proverb, 22:29. Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank. And I'd love to take the next 15 minutes and tell you why this was timely and important to me about some questions that I'd been asking God. But I knew that Jesus was revealing himself, that he was explaining this ready yourself thing, and that he had pointed me to this verse. And I want to make all those connections for you, but I can't. So I'll just tell you that the most important thing I took away from this was that it was him. And that it was okay for me to receive him in a weird way, in a weird place, and believe it. And this has happened probably 5 or 6 times over the last few months. And I've come to strongly believe that this is not only the voice of Jesus, but that he intends me to understand him and to hear him and see him even while I'm asleep. So I just thank him for it. And I take it, and I always believe him. And that's why I've been seeing Jesus.
My name is Terry, and I'm excited to get to share my story with you today. But if there is anything that you hear from me, I hope you hear that Jesus aggressively runs after those who doubt him. That Jesus aggressively runs after those who doubt him. My story starts off with me saying a few words that I hope I never say again. I've learned I probably shouldn't. And has anyone here ever said the phrase something along the lines of, the last thing I need right now is blank. The last thing that I could use right now is blank. And so I'm talking with my wife, April, and I say, honey, the last thing we need right now is another baby. So let me provide some context around this. So we had literally just moved. And we had sold a house and bought a house and went through all the stuff of that, unpacking boxes and furniture and painting walls and all that. And it was just a crazy time of uncertainty for us. We also, both of us had some things that were changing at our workplaces. And there was a lot of uncertainty there. What is the future going to look like? And then the last kind of big thing that we were thinking about is that, you know, our story includes 2.5 years of going through infertility to have our daughter. And what a roller coaster that was of emotions, of treatments, financials, all that. And so I was thinking, gosh, this just this is the last thing we need right now. And guess what? God had a different plan for us. We're pregnant, bam. And we were thankful for that. We're very thankful for that. So I remember going for our ultrasound, the first one. And going in, and on the screen, you could see the ultrasound, you could see the scan, and there's a little nub on there, and I'm like, oh, it's a baby boy! And the technician said, sir, that would be your whole baby, actually, right there. Okay. Thanks for that. Thanks for clarifying. And so he said, hey, this is really early on, you know, you're not going to see a lot yet, but we want you to come back next week. So he said, okay. And around that time, my wife had also done a blood test. And so the next day, she calls for results. And there were 2 levels that they read. And the first one, they said, hey, this level looks okay. But this other level, it's really, really low. And in fact, we think that it's probably not likely that you'll keep the pregnancy. I remember my wife calling me, having to tell me this. And us just struggling through that, and me struggling through trying to support my wife during this. And I remember April saying, how can we get this great gift but not be able to receive it? And I remember praying with April and just being like, Jesus, where are you? You know, I wish I had words that I could say to you right now, but I don't have anything. I'm just empty. I'm just empty. And it was during that dark time that Jesus met us in the most the craziest place, I would have guessed, through an email. I want to read that to you. "Hey, Terry, we've never officially met, but I'm an intern with CSM. Pretty random, but I was praying just now for completely unrelated things and then snapped out of a vision. And the vision was just of you and your wife who was pregnant. Now, of course, I have no idea if your wife is pregnant, and after wondering for a moment if that little vision meant anything, I heard the Lord say, 'I'm giving birth to new life.' I didn't get knowledge that if that is literal new life, but I understand it to mean something that he is doing, something beautiful and joyful. Of course, whatever it is, it's for both of you, your family. Anyway, I wasn't sure if I was supposed to tell you, but then the Lord said it'd be silly for me to withhold encouragement of any kind. So there you go. It's clear that he's placed great favor upon you. Sincerely, Brianna." And as I sat there reading this email, literally just fighting back tears, or as I think a lot of us guys would call it, having allergies, I remember just forwarding this email to April and didn't even put anything in the subject line or anything. I just sent it over and I call April. I'm like, honey, you got to read this. And so we read it together. And all of a sudden, we just realized that this was Jesus pursuing us. This was him saying, "I am with you." And while it wasn't a guarantee that things were going to be good, that they were going to turn out the way we wanted them, it wasn't a guarantee that it would be easy. There was a comfort knowing that he was with us, that he was pursuing us even when we doubted him. And the next day, we went in for the second ultrasound. And even though it felt like we were in that waiting room for over an hour, there was just a peace that we had. And we walked into the room, and I remember vividly holding April's hand and just waiting. And the ultrasound tech, she went and was doing her scan, and she looks over and smiles at us, and she said, "Everything looks just fine. And I can actually see the heartbeat right here." And we were thankful, and we're 17 weeks thankful into this thing right now. But I want to tell you, I'm thankful for the good result. I'm even more thankful that we all have a God that pursues us even when we doubt him. Amen. We do. And I know that there are probably a lot of doubts in this room, that there are a lot of things going on, and I want you to know, whether you're experiencing something now or whether that comes in the future, that Jesus runs after those who doubt him. I know because I've seen him.
Hey guys, I'm Belinda. Hi. Thanks. And I see Jesus everywhere. And I know that sounds convenient, but it's true. I've been finding him using everything and anything, really, in my life, all around me, to help call my attention to the fact that he's here and that he wants me to see him and recognize him and actually enjoy this relationship that he's offered like I do all of my other relationships. So I see him in my work with women who are seeking to recover and change addictions in their lives. I see him bringing them freedom and hope. I see him in music, hear him on the radio, hijacking lyrics of secular songs to let me know something about him that I otherwise might not have recognized. I see him in relationships, and the fact that though I feel like I have a ton of really rich relationships in my life, that none of them have ever met all of the need that I have. None of them could serve as a replacement for the relationship that I get to have with him. But one of my favorite things is when he shows up when I'm minding my own business and not even thinking about him. One of those ways, a couple of years ago, I was watching MTV's Video Music Awards, and a really peculiar thing happened. There was the award for Best Female Video, and some of you might remember this. It was awarded to sweet little country music singer Taylor Swift. Okay, we got a few people that remember it. And so she's up there giving this really sweet acceptance speech, and someone objects. That someone is Kanye West. And suddenly, he appears on the stage. You know, she's giving her speech. He's right next to her, and he says something to the effect of, "Taylor, I'm really happy for you, and I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the greatest videos of all time. One of the greatest videos of all time." And so, understandably, I'm sitting there like, what? What? How did this happen? Who let him up on stage? I mean, even if you agree that that video was amazing, but I was offended for Taylor because here she is getting this honor, and he had just, you know, stripped her of that right to accept it. And then it struck me that Jesus would actually be right in having that reaction to me in a lot of instances in my life where I give praise to things that I'm noticing around me, the praise that actually belongs to him. And I started to recognize how that message, he was speaking to me in those moments where he could lovingly look at me in a way that only Jesus really excels at doing, far more tactfully than Kanye. And he would say to me, far more appropriately too, he would say to me, "Belinda, I am really happy for you when you notice these things that I've given you, but I am the greatest lover of all time. And I'm not going to let you miss me here offering you this relationship, trying to substitute or glorify these other things when I made you for me." That's cool. You want to listen to Kanye? I can reach you through that. I can reach you through anything. And I love that Jesus doesn't just wait for us to come to church or to get in our Bibles to speak to us, that he will use Kanye-type characters, that he will use music on the radio, that he'll use anything around us because he is desperate for us to see that he's here, to recognize the relevance to our lives, and to engage in relationship. And the Bible actually talks about this in Psalms 19. It says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world." I believe this is just proof that we can find him and hear him in anything. So really the question becomes, where can't I find Jesus? Where can't I hear him if I'm looking?
Hey, let's give these guys a hand, sharing their stories. Man. Two services on Saturday, three today, plus a run-through. These guys have been phenomenal. And the theme that I see in what they've shared, and I told them this last night, was just this spiritual practice they're modeling for all of us of noticing. There is a spiritual practice of noticing that I see throughout all their stories because Jesus does want to meet us. He wants to show himself to us wherever we are. And just like the song we sung earlier says, everywhere I go, everywhere we go, we can see him.